This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 571 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com, and joining me for the new year, welcome to 2025 from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, it is Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, thank you, mate.
I'm having
a little quiet little laugh.
Why are you having a quiet little laugh?
Well, you just sent me through some photos.
Yeah.
I've just started looking at them. And the first one pops up.
Yeah.
And I've got, I've seen that photo before. I recognize this exact photo. And now I realize it must have been your Facebook stream that I saw it. I didn't even see the name. There's something about this little fluffy thing on the edge of the surf in the beach. Yeah. Yeah. And there was some comment on Facebook about, I don't know, the only thing that washed up or something. I don't know what it was. But I'm looking at it, oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. I didn't realize it was yours. It's kind of funny. What an idiot.
How have you been? How was your Christmas and your New Year?
Yeah, not bad. It was pretty quiet. It's one of those weird Christmases. Even my 13-year-old said, it doesn't feel like Christmas this year, Dad.
Yeah, right.
And so I hit her over the back of the head and sent her back to her bedroom and locked her back in. Apparently not being allowed out of the room for 2 weeks takes some of the fun away from feeling like Christmas.
Oh.
No, I think her school went up to like December 20 or something, so there wasn't much build-up time.
Yeah, right.
And so she just didn't feel it. So it wasn't an overly Christmassy sort of feel, but we caught up with all the family, which is important, and saw everybody and
nice.
Ate food and got fatter and that kind of stuff. So that was all good.
Awesome.
And yourself?
Well, I travelled to the other side of the country at great expense to see the family that I very rarely get to see, and 5 days into it came down with COVID.
Dun, dun.
So didn't get to catch up with all of my family.
No one cares about that anymore, though, do they? Don't you just go and give it to everybody anyway?
Well.
Is that how you got it?
Apparently so, yeah. So, woke up Christmas morning with a bit of a scratchy throat, didn't think too much of it, caught up with one half of the family for lunch and was catching up with another part of the family for dinner, left the lunch event, went back to the hotel because we'd prepared a dessert plate that we were taking to the dinner thing.
Yeah.
Said to Kath, I'm just going to have a little lie down for half an hour because I'm feeling a bit washed out. Got up. Went to the dinner thing, said to everyone, I'm just going to keep my distance because I feel like I'm coming down with something, and woke up on Boxing Day just feeling like I'd been run over by a truck. So straight away went off to a pharmacy, got some rats, and sure enough lit up like a Christmas tree. So then I had to ring everybody and go, guys, I am so sorry, but just tested positive with COVID, so... Yeah, so there was an auntie and an uncle and then another uncle that I didn't get to catch up with because just had to, keep our distance from everybody. So that was a bit sucky. The solo uncle is in a assisted care facility, so I would not have been allowed to go in there anyway.
No, not at all.
Even if you were prepared to, ignore having COVID, which I wasn't. So that was kind of crap. So I felt like crap for, for 4 days, and 2 days after I got it, Kath came down with it. So, that was a bit ordinary.
Yeah, funny about it.
But, it was good to get the camera out and do a little bit of photography. And
where did you go to do your photography? What did you tell me?
So when we flew into Perth, we drove down to an area called Dunsborough, which is just north of Margaret River. For those outside of Australia, Margaret River is a famous surfing spot and a famous wine-growing region. It's probably the only... Oh, not the only, but probably the most well-known wine-growing region in Western Australia. So we spent 3 nights down there, 2 days, 3 nights down there, and just did a bit of driving around, did a cave, went to the beach, did some walks on the beach and just generally had a couple of relaxing days. Then we drove up to Perth on Christmas Eve, and then we had Christmas Day and Boxing Day in Perth. And then on the 27th, we drove up to...
Whilst you were still sick, you kept on going.
Well, we had to, mate. Our accommodation in Perth was only for the 2 nights, and we'd already paid for our accommodation up north. And I figured we're going up to this little place called Jurian Bay, which is, you know, like a little fishing village. So we figured probably easier to not associate with other people if you're in a tiny little place like that than it is if you're in Perth.
Yeah.
So
you don't think sitting in a tin can for however many hours maybe contributed to your wife getting...
Well, you know, it's quite possible. I mean, the fact that she was in close proximity to me...
She could have sat in the boot. You know, she didn't have to sit in the cab with you. That's her own personal choice, mate. You know?
Yeah.
If she gives you any stick for it, you just pull that and say, nah, you had choices. Yeah. You could have put the luggage up here with me. Yep. You could have sat in the back. Yeah, the real back.
Yeah. So,
and what was the little fishing villas like? Was that nice?
It was good, yeah. The interesting thing about that road that goes north out of Perth is that most of the fishing villages are not on the highway. You've actually got to turn off the highway and travel, you know, 5 to 8 kilometres out to the coast to find these little villages. Jurian Bay is probably the first of those villages that's actually on the highway, or should I say the highway actually goes to the coast and passes through the town, so you don't actually have to, you know, divert off the highway to get there.
They really should have built all those other fishing villages much closer to the highway.
Yeah. You just have to have a really big fishing rod. But while we were at Jurian Bay, the primary reason for heading up in that area was because I wanted to go to the Pinnacles.
Yes.
And I do realise that of the 4 images that I've sent you, none of them are of the Pinnacles. But I did get to the Pinnacles.
Did you not go there? Okay.
And Paul Sutton came along.
Really?
Yes. So he drove up from Perth on the afternoon of the 27th because we'd agreed that we would go and shoot the Pinnacles in the sort of golden hour and into blue hour and into the night and maybe do some astro. So, yeah, so he drove the 2.5 hours up from Perth, and we met at the Pinnacles around about, I don't know, 6 or 6.30, then, you know, proceeded to work our way through the Pinnacle Desert and take a heap of photos there. And I'm really absolutely stoked with some of the stuff that I got. And unfortunately, I'd logged into my Windows system this evening before I realized that all my photos were on my Linux system, and I was already running late for this recording of the podcast. So I just thought, I'll get you those photos next time and we can discuss. But there was also just north of Jurian Bay these sand dunes called Heartsease Sand Dunes. And I went up there on the evening of the 28th, again at golden hour, because the thing about the sand dunes is you get these lovely patterns from the wind-blown sand, but they really only show up well in photos if you're shooting at, you know, when you've got that really low-angled light, because it then gives you some contrast on the ridges of the sand.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just had an absolute ball. You know, drove the car up. I was able to park the car like literally at the base of the sand dunes.
Wow.
And then just wandered up into the sand dunes with my tripod and my camera bag. And I must have run around on the sand dunes for about an hour and a half, just taking heaps and, I don't know, probably close to 100 photos. And yeah, it was
just... Look at the joy in photography. Look at that.
Absolutely. I was just running around just yelling out to the void, how freaking good is this? Because it didn't seem...
It's just sad, but there's no one there to share it.
I know. But it just seemed that just when you thought the sand dunes had given you everything, you just found something else. It's just like, oh, how good is this? So
I'm a bit disappointed looking at the picture that you sent me, though.
It's not the best of the shots that I had.
Well, disappoints me, Bruce, and you didn't let me finish, because it's not like you to interrupt me. That's usually my job. You've got no one with a red jacket standing in the far distance to show us some scale. You know? I think you've really got to learn a few things if you're going to get into this landscape gig, dude.
Right, yeah. Right.
How am I supposed to know how big this is without a person in a red jacket?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I love the lines.
Oh, man, it was just so good. So good. Yeah, so I had a ball. I did take a selfie while I was in the sand dunes.
So you should.
Where I just set the camera up on the 10-second timer and then ran around in an arc and then got a photo of myself going, ah!
you damn well should.
Yeah. But what I now need to do with that image is now clone out all of my footsteps that messed up the sand. it was good. But I'll tell you what was crazy.
What was crazy?
We got back to the motel room. Now, I went up into the sand dunes at 6:30 in the evening. And I came down out of the sand dunes at about 7:45. So I was up there for about 1.25 hours. Got back to the motel. I said to Kath, I'm feeling a bit sunburned. And within half an hour, I looked like a beetroot.
Wow.
And I had gone up into those sand dunes with not a hint of sunburn on me.
It's the reflection.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I said to Kath. I said, it must have just been UV reflected off the sand.
You ever said it must have been you. UV, that's right. This is a bit mean to say that to you. It must have been you. Seems somewhat mean. Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? That's all it takes, yeah?
So,
it's like being on water. Yeah, the water's just so bad.
So reflective.
Reflecting the massive sun.
But what really got me was that this was so late in the day. Like, I honestly didn't think it would be that harsh. But obviously I was wrong.
Yeah, wow. And not sunburned to the point where you're peeling, where you're okay the next day kind of thing? Or?
I basically, like, from that minute, like, as soon as I recognised that I was burnt, I said to Kathy, you got some moisturiser? And I just started covering myself in it and did so for the next 3-4 days. And I did not peel at all, which was very fortunate. So, yeah. So we left Juryan Bay on the 29th, drove back down into Perth, and then on the 30th we flew out first thing in the morning back to New South Wales. So we were back here for the New Year's Eve fireworks. Went to Wonji Wonji again, the same place we'd
been. Wonji Wonji.
Wonji Wonji, yep. Wonji Wonji is this little community. It's maybe 15 minutes from where we live. And they do these community-sponsored fireworks for New Year's Eve.
Oh, okay.
So literally they have signage up in the couple of weeks leading up saying, you know, community-sponsored fireworks, and there's a bank account. And if you want to contribute, you can contribute money to the fireworks. So I'm actually going to chuck $100 their way, because that's 2 years in a row that I've gone along and just thought, these guys rock with their fireworks.
How cool is that?
It is so cool. And because it's a little bay on Lake Macquarie, we literally left home at 8:30. We were there by 8:45. We walked down to the jetty, set up the tripod, fireworks start at 9. They go for 20 minutes, which is longer than Sydney, right? Sydney's fireworks only go for about 16 minutes.
Is this bay putting one firework up at a time?
No. They're sending up a few at a time. Yes, it's not on the scale.
Sydney's sending a few hundreds at a time. Yeah,
it's not on the scale.
Just whilst you mentioned the Sydney fireworks, because I found this out just before New York, that it's actually one family that does them, right?
It'd be the Howard family, I think.
Something, and they're like the fifth generation of firework maker, which is quite amazing. Yeah,
yeah.
It's just very cool, and it's all done by one family.
Yeah, yeah, there was a guy called Sid Howard, I think, was
Bell.
He would have been like the third or fourth generation, because I knew his name back in the 90s when Oz Stereo, which is one of the main radio companies in Australia, they were doing a series of events that they marketed as Sky Show, and the whole thing with Sky Show was they got their production guys to build a big music montage that ran for like 10 or 15 minutes. And then they sat down with the fireworks guys and they synchronized the fireworks to the accents of the music.
Well, so you'd have like Irish music and like Italian music, and Russian music, because what kind of accents of the music?
I was trying to work out where you were going with that.
When Irish eyes, eyes are shining, and I will walk 500
exactly
miles.
That's
all the accents of the music. It's good. 909 Swiss Luftballons.
So yeah, so
it's the Foti. It's the Foti family.
Oh, okay.
FOTO. So they've been making fireworks since 1793.
Wow, and boy, are they tired.
No wonder the old guy would be knackered. Every year since 1998, they've been doing the Sydney New Year's Eve fireworks.
Right, okay. So not Sid Howard.
Must be a different mob.
Yep.
Must be a different mob than Sydney. No, Ron Howard. yeah, but not the same guy. But yeah, I watched this little interview with them, and they were quite amazing. And but this in 1793, that was just a little factoid that I thought was kind of, and it kind of made that a little less just a big corporate thing, and made it kind of a little bit more interest.
Yeah. So did the fireworks, took some photos, and then my other big news. That just before Christmas, like about a week before we flew out, I made the very tough decision to sell the Fairlane.
Not the Fairlane.
The car that I inherited when Dad died. As much as I would have loved to have kept it, and restored it. It was just costing an absolute fortune to keep it on the road because it had done 300,000 kilometres. It was 27 years old. There were lots of parts that were failing on it, and it just needed so much work. And if I had...
And time.
And if I had the skills to do it myself, it probably wouldn't have cost me as much. But because I was paying retail for everything, it was just ridiculous. And... you know, there was a part of me that said, yeah, I really want to keep this. And there was a part of me that went, you know what, I'm done.
Yeah.
And so I said to Kath, look, if I'm going to sell this, I need to buy something that is going to be enjoyable to drive. So I did the...
oh, he's got electric.
You can tell. Look at him. If you can see his face, you can tell he's got electric. You can tell by looking at his face. He's gone nerd. He's having a nerdgasm.
So everyone's accusing me of having a midlife crisis. I bought myself a 2017 Mustang.
Oh, okay, you didn't buy it. It didn't go electric. No, you went the other way.
I went the other way. Yeah, no. It's got to be V8, mate.
What colour is it?
The official name of the colour is Ruby Red. It's a deep...
A red sports car.
Yeah, a red sports car, yeah. Sort of deep maroon kind of colour.
Cliche!
Yeah. I don't care. I love it. So I picked that up a week and a half ago. Absolutely loved it.
Did you sell the Fairlane? Is the Fairlane gone?
Yeah. So the Fairlane went.
Did it go quickly? Was there a lot of interest?
I wouldn't say there was a lot of interest. I had a couple of tyre kickers, but then this guy reached out like on a Friday and he said, hey, mate, is the Fairlane still available? And I went, yeah. And he said, can I come and look at it this weekend? And I said, yeah, I'm kind of busy tomorrow, but could do Sunday morning. And he drove from Sydney up here to where we are, which is a good 2 hour or hour and a half drive, and rolled up with the cash in hand and took it for a 1 kilometre drive. I went with him and I said, do you want to get it out on the open road? And he's like, no. Nah, I'm fine. I'm done. I'll take it. I was like, oh, okay.
Wow.
And it was like, I don't know if I want to sell it.
you had that glorious trip back across country with it.
I did.
That's your time. That was your moment.
Absolutely.
You know? It's always going to be hard to beat that as an experience with it.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I've got. Quite a few photos that I took on that trip with the car in it. So, I'll always have the memories of that car.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of me in the last 6 or 8 weeks. So, yeah.
Oh, So, look how excited you are with your new sport.
Oh, mate, I love it. Oh, it is beautiful. So,
well, yes, should we talk about these photos of yours?
You've said, yeah, yeah, go for it.
Seems you're all. No, I mean, what do you want to say about them? You're the one to share. I did fix them.
Of course, you did.
I've edited them all already.
I bet you've added people to all of them.
Yeah, that one. I've only edited two of them. Look, I've only edited two. Yeah, I'm sending them. Yeah, I'm uploading them now. Here we go.
So what have you sent me? Okay. Where's the chat? There's the chat. Okay. Ooh. What the hell have you done?
I've edited them.
Oh my God. I've made them
interesting.
They're horrid.
Orange in the sunset one rather than that pale whitish colour that you had.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So now it's sunset. People now know it's sunset because it's orange.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And I've really darkened down all those foreground lines because they were really distracting me. So I've just sort of highlighted the overexposed bit in the middle now. There you go. You know, you can have those free of charge, right?
Thank you, mate.
No, let's talk about them properly.
Okay.
So the first one, what is this isolated little thing on the beach that you're seeing? What is that?
Yeah, so...
What is that?
So basically, this was on the beach at Durian Bay, and I was shooting with the Lauer 15mm f2 manual focus lens. And so I liked the idea of, you know, some sort of foreground interest right up close to the wide-angle lens and then just this, you know, soft bokeh of the ocean and the sky behind it. And I found these little things, these tumbleweeds. I don't know what they were. And so I went and grabbed one and plonked it down on the sand and tried to guess, you know, where might a, you know, wave come up to,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And then I think I was shooting at around about F4 for these. I mean, if you look at the sand to the right-hand side of it, you can see how narrow the depth of field is.
Yeah, really short.
And so I was basically down on my belly, resting on my elbows with the camera held out in front of me and, you know, manually focusing and using the focus peaking to get my focal distance. And then just, you know, waiting for a wave that would come up to where the little tumbleweed was sitting and then, you know, trying to just nail the moment where the water sort of wrapped around the tumbleweed. So I probably got about 30 odd shots of this and, you know, this was the pick of the bunch.
Pick of the litter.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that little curve of sea foam towards the end, that's perfect.
It's lovely.
You couldn't have planned that any better, you know?
No. So I was really happy with that. I, you know, did a little bit of cloning on the sand. There were a couple little just specks of debris and things on the sand. And so you just clone those out just to make it look a bit more perfect.
I can see one clone spot. But that's just being hypercritical. That's what I do.
Yeah.
But no, that's really cool. I mean, it's that curve. Oh, here's a thing. There's a couple of things wrong with it. There you go. If you zoom... There's a dust spot.
Okay.
Big blobby dust spot halfway up the beach to the right of the tumbleweed.
Yeah.
And then further to the right of that, there's like either a water blob on your lens. Oh, there's another big dust spot.
I think it was a big
dust spot in the sky.
Yeah, I think it was a spray. There was sea spray like just hitting the lens because I was so close to the water, you know, so... Yeah.
Oh, of course.
It's more than likely that there was a spot of water on the lens.
And there's a whopping big out of focus bit of dust on your sensor in the sky.
I thought I'd found them all, but
sort of triangulating between those three things.
Okay.
Well, here's an interesting thing. Yeah, okay, let me just try this whilst we're at it.
Yeah.
I'm going to open this image up in Luminar Neo, which is their AI software.
Yeah.
Because it does AI dust removal.
Okay.
Let's just see it out of interest sake. Does it pick it up? Does it do it?
Okay.
So let's go to Erase here. Remove dust spots. So it's just press the one button.
Mm-hmm.
See how it does. Yeah, gone. Bang. Look at that. So the dust spot, both dust spots went
instantly,
completely gone, perfectly cloned out. but that little dob of water is still there.
So it knows the difference between dust and water.
Yeah, that's for an instant fix. So I've been using that quite a bit because when shooting with the Sonys, I found they're really bad for dust on the sensors. I mean, really bad. I've never seen anything like it, frankly. No, I'm deadly serious. I mean, I shoot F-22 at 15 mil up into the sky with my cannons, which if you're ever going to see dust, it's then.
That's when you'll see it.
And underexposing the scene, so when I'm using flash, don't see any dust.
Right.
I don't remember the last time I cloned dust, but every single photo with my Sony's got 7 or 8 dust spots on it.
Right.
Every single photo. Yeah, it's remarkable.
Okay.
Versus the old Canon technology, which is pretty old.
Yeah.
I just would have expected Sony. I guess the Sony's probably the same age. I just would have expected. I mean, the Sony I've used, I should say. I won't say anything of the newer ones, but the A7 III seems to be fraught with dust.
Okay.
But anyway, that's cool. And what was it? So the Pinnacle's you and the missus.
Yep.
Okay. I've got to ask a question. Is that your car in the back left?
No.
What's the job?
To be honest, I didn't even realise that it was there. I was looking at the rest of the frame, but yeah, I could just crop in a little bit.
The first thing I see, my eye goes,
"Gah!" I normally see stuff like that. I didn't notice it on that one.
You say CDO is a bad thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny how that stuff just stands out. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's some cool rocks though, isn't it?
Formations. Oh, no, great. And oh man, you should have seen the stuff I got at Golden Hour. Because what we did was Kath and I, as we drove up, I said, look, I'd like to go and have a quick look through just to get my bearings of what's around so that when I come back this evening with Paul, I've got a bit of an idea of what I'm looking for.
So
we just did a quick trip through for, like half hour, 40 minutes. And such a touristy thing to do, right? So you pay for your ticket and they tell you, you drive in through the car park, you turn left and you get onto the track that goes through the Pinnacle Desert. And they tell you it's a 4 kilometer loop and there are pinnacles everywhere. And what does everyone do? They pull up at the first bay they come to. You come over the first crest, there's a bay and there's 50 cars and 500 people all crammed into a square meter of sand. It's like, is wrong with you people?
So, everyone's stopping. It must be good.
That's right. So I just said to Kath, we're not stopping here. And literally, you only had to drive another 300 metres and there was another car parking spot that had maybe 5 cars in it. And I was like, we're not stopping here. So we drive another 300 metres and you got the place to yourself.
Well, except for the car in the background,
it's
not yours.
Yeah, so that car was actually on the track and driving through. But yeah, so we just had a quick look around in the middle of the day, grabbed a few shots,
but that's exactly what you should do, though. If you're there with time, you should always go through and do a reconnoiter.
Totally.
You know, which ones stand out most to you? Get out your, what's that Sunseeker app thing?
Sun Surveyor.
So there's a whole bunch of ones, but get that out there and get some planning in and prepare yourself as best as possible.
Yeah.
Try and work out, what kind of lens you're going to need, what width, all the stuff.
Yep.
I would even shoot some of the actual shots I wanted to do to work out my compositions. I don't want to try to work out compositions in the dark. I want to have some concept of where am I going to need to be, because it's all harder to do at night than it is in the daytime.
Of course.
So if it was me, I'd be out there shooting some daytime reference shots.
Yep.
To know what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
Especially pointing in the direction that that you know you're going to be needing to be shooting in.
Yeah.
So definitely a good idea with the. I get it when you're on family stuff, you can't. But if it was a dedicated photo trip, then
absolutely
out there, shooting as much as possible.
Yep.
Beforehand.
Yeah.
Oh, well done.
So, mate, it was awesome. And Paul and I, we started shooting just after 6:30, and sundown at that stage was happening at around about 7:25. So we got about an hour of golden hour. And then once the sun actually went below the horizon, for me, that was when the magic really started. I found the blue hour to be even more compelling photographically.
Even more better.
Yeah, absolutely gorgeous. Got these really nice magentas in the sky. Oh, that's the other thing.
Since 2005, Shutters Inc. has been a labor of love. But beyond the time required to produce it, there is also a financial commitment. If you find value in the podcast and would like to help keep the servers running, hit up the Patreon link, which is in the show notes. Even a couple of dollars a month will help. Much appreciated. Now, back to the podcast.
The whole time I was in Western Australia, I did not move my white balance off 5600 Kelvin.
There you go.
Yep. And I have not tweaked the white balance in any of the images that I've processed.
Works a treat, mate.
It works perfectly. I love it. I honestly don't think I'll ever change.
Well, that's since I discovered that too, I felt exactly the same way. That's it.
Yeah.
Bang. Yeah, job done.
Yeah. And as you say,
worst comes to worst, you can always turn it to black and white.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess it's a bit more of a commitment for you because you shoot JPEG, but, you know, I shoot RAW, so I can always change it if I need to. But I looked at all the photos that I shot and went, yeah, no, I don't need to change that white balance. I'm happy with it coming out the way it looked, you know.
Yeah, it's cool, hey?
Yeah.
What new things we've learnt this last year, hey?
Absolutely. So what was next?
No. Other than the photos with you and you, there was the sunset shot you got up there.
Oh yes, on the boardwalk. So that was at Busselton.
Board being the operative word.
It's not actually a boardwalk. It's a concrete path that runs along the bay at Busselton. And I got some nice shots on the Busselton jetty. That was the whole point of going to Busselton at sunset.
Is that the one with the blue building on the end?
That's the one.
Yeah.
And it has a train track that runs out along the jetty as well.
Oh, nice.
So they have a platform right outside that blue building with a sign, because the platform is named after some guy, Roy Morris or something. So there's a sign that says the Roy Morris platform. But yeah, so I've got some nice shots of that. I'll have to dig all these out and send them to you and you can critique them.
Yeah, so you put them on Facebook. I only saw one, which is that plot.
I haven't posted everything that I shot. I really am remiss because I shot some stuff I was really happy with. So
isn't it funny? But here's the thing, though: you pleased yourself first and foremost, which is
absolutely
all that matters.
Yep,
that's all that matters. Yeah, it doesn't matter. You don't need the vindication of Facebook.
No, I don't. I shoot for my own pleasure, and that's it. You know. Yeah. And if Glenn Lavender doesn't like it, it doesn't bother me.
Because none of us enjoy them, so you may as well. Oh, I'm only being serious. No, good stuff. I do definitely want, for next episode, definitely want to look at some of your other pickaroonies.
Yep, I will.
I've been doing a bit of shooting again.
Oh, nice. Good.
I've been shooting kangaroos.
Excellent.
My team returned to training again, so I'm out there photographing them. Been down there this morning to have a shootout with them.
Nice.
But here's the thing, though. It's funny, and it could be just familiarity, but shooting with the old Canon 5D4, getting back after the shooting the Sony.
Right.
And using an optical viewfinder,
yep.
It is just so much, I don't know, it's just so much more gratifying. I enjoyed the experience just so much more. And I feel more in the moment having a live, real view than looking at a TV screen.
Yeah, right.
It's just, and I guess, familiarity, as I said. Yeah, so I'm so like an extension to my body anyway.
Yep.
But that was.
It's interesting
very
because
going back to that,
I've now been shooting with the A7 III for 5 years because I literally got it on New Year's Eve of '99. It would be interesting for me to pick up a camera with an optical viewfinder again and see how I felt about it. Yeah, I must admit I've become so familiar with shooting with an EVF that it doesn't bother me at all. But interesting.
Now as we know, Los Angeles had some diabolical fires this last a week or so, and I was going through the National Geographic put a post up of the LA fires in photographs.
Right.
So I thought I'll have a look. So might look at photos occasionally.
Yep.
So I'm flicking through them and it's going, not bad, not bad. Oh, that's really good. Yeah, not bad, not bad. Oh, that's really good. And like, all the way through, every third or fourth one was a standout image. And the rest are all just, the photos,
Yep.
And so I went back to the beginning again and looked at who shot them. And every one that went, same guy.
Right.
Every single one of them. And he's, I had a little get-together with some of the people who came to India with me. Unfortunately, only the Melbourne folk, because the people in Perth didn't come, because I didn't invite them. I did a little editing get-together, which is caught up, had some bickies and some champagne and did some editing of some of their photos from the trip, just to put my influence on them sort of thing. And I said to them all, it was that morning I found this guy. And I said, I found this guy. His name's Ben Stowe. It's Stowe. Look him up. You'll love him. Ben Stowe. And his photos are fabulous, they're all looking, I can't find anyone called Ben Stowe. I said, make sure you're spelling it right. Stowe. And they're doing it. No, can't find him. And then they're going, do you mean Ethan Swope? I've gone, that's his name. his name wrong the whole time. But I even had the spelling, even need a spelling in my head of his name being wrong. Which was just crazy. I've just sent through the link. Have a click on the link for me.
Okay.
It's to his gallery of the LA fires.
Oh, I love that. The first one
with the hose.
Yep.
So it's fabulous storytelling in the image, not just here's a photo of a burning thing. The next one, it's a landscape. That doesn't evoke an awful lot. And the next one's just a burning house. But the fourth one, is remarkable. It is just. It's got to win.
That's a Pulitzer, isn't it?
It's got to be, Being pulled out of either an old people's home or a hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah, the blanket with the little Christmas doggy on it.
And she's not even in a wheelchair. She's in a lawn chair.
Yeah, or something. But it looks like it's got wheels and she's been wheeled backwards to an ambulance.
Yeah.
And then her face is the only thing that's lit.
Yep.
And I don't think it's him that's doing that.
It looks like it's the headlights of another vehicle or something.
Exactly. And she's staring right down the barrel of the lens, and the person pulling is obviously looks like they're pulling with either calling for help or with strain to move along.
Yeah.
What a powerful, powerful shot.
Absolutely. Then
the next one is not even more remarkable, but also remarkable.
That's great.
Does that not evoke a Christmas tragedy
if you've ever seen one? Absolutely.
Just stunning. And
just a natural triptych in a single composition.
And the burning Christmas tree in the middle frame is just, it evokes loss. It evokes so much. As I said, so much storytelling in his imagery.
Yeah.
The next one's okay. It's just a street burning. But then the next one's kind of aftermath stuff.
Yeah, right.
And, it's a man he's got the clothes he had on when he had to escape. He's got one bag of stuff. There's just so much storytelling in his photos that I thought, this guy is just fabulous. So I thought people might appreciate having a bit of a look. And I've gone and had a quick look at his Ukraine.
The next one after that with the couple with their back to the camera.
Yeah. Evocative again, hey?
Yeah, right.
There's just so much. He's just a pretty talented bloke.
Yeah.
And young fella by the looks of him too, just a young fella.
Yeah.
Yeah, great storyteller.
Yeah.
There's one fair way in, just of a fire engine and all these embers just flying past, obviously slightly slow shutter speed, or the wind's moving in that damn fast. But again, and just this slight silhouette of a fireman running around the truck, but it's just, they're just kind of surrounded by fire. Yeah,
that's
just
great.
Yeah, and this one massive spark as a leading line.
Yeah.
The next one long again, stunning.
Yes.
He's a talented fella. Very talented fella. As you just look through, keep going through. There's a few further along with people with like mining helmets on. The depth of that image is just remarkable depth.
Yeah.
Yeah, leading the eye all the way through the frame is just stunning photography. Just no ends to this man's talent. So we hate him, of course. it's very cool, photographer. So he's definitely worth. I said go look at some of his other ones. If anyone wants to have a look at these, is Ukraine war photos, Lebanon.
Yeah, right.
Just yeah, he's a super talented bloke. So I reached out to him on Instagram to invite him on the podcast.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, no reply.
Okay.
So I've messaged Ben Spoke, Ben Stowe, and said, if he'll come on. No reply from him either, funny enough. So that was one highlight of the week. Now, one little thing, I just want to mention two more things. Olympus rumours.
Okay.
It's got me a little bit excited. There's an Olympus rumour going around that in February at the CP Plus show in Japan, sounds like they're going to announce an Olympus OM3 or OM1, OM3 digital variant. So like the old-fashioned Olympus OM1 is one of the classic manual-only film cameras, just a beast in its own right.
When you say manual-only, what do you mean?
Manual-only. The only is a metal body, manual-only digital camera.
Manual as in no motor drive?
No, well, it's a digital camera, so it doesn't need a motor drive.
So what do you mean by manual?
I said manual is not aperture priority or shutter priority, manual.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
It's a photographic term. You may not have heard of it.
I didn't know you were talking about exposure. I was trying to work out manual what? Manual, you could have just said
the
exposure.
The manual-only camera.
You could have just said exposure.
I didn't think you need to.
Yeah, okay.
So that's pretty exciting. If that is indeed something that comes out, that could very easily tempt me to Micro Four Thirds.
Right. What is the appeal of it?
Well, I started out with an OM2.
Right.
OM2. And it just, that, I mean, they are some of the best cameras ever made in the history of photography.
Yeah. Right.
Think of your Nikon FMs, all that kind of stuff, your Leica M series. They're iconic cameras. And if someone could finally come out with a digital version of one of those, which people have been calling for since the start of time of digital,
right?
You think camera companies would finally bloody listen to what the demands of the people?
Yeah.
And so anyway, that's one thing that I think is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Keep an eye out for. But the last thing I want to talk about on the photographic podcast is about sound to a sound engineer.
Okay.
And the sound is the sound of a meteorite hitting the earth.
Whoa.
This people's Ring doorbell camera captured a meteor hitting their doorstep.
What?
They came and found there's all this substance all over their doorstep. Now, what the hell is that? And I think it's like the father-in-law said, I think it's a meteorite. They checked the Ring camera. They saw this thing explode in from coming through the frame. And they sent parts of it off to some meteorite expert who tested it. Said, yep, meteorite.
Wow.
But you can actually hear it on the Ring camera hitting the hidden ground. Well, that's pretty noteworthy and worthy of mentioning, I thought.
Yeah, right. Wow. Cool. Yeah. Have you got a link for that?
Yeah, I've just sent it through.
Cool. Awesome. I'll chuck that in the show notes.
I just thought that was pretty cool. So that's all I got for the week, my friend.
Lovely.
Ben Stowe, a good mate, Ben. I've got a workshop this Saturday, so I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
So I wanted to circle back around to the fact that you'd been out shooting again. So I take it we can assume from all of this that the health is, you know, being good to you at the moment?
It's been okay to me. I don't know why.
Okay.
I have had changed one medication, so maybe that's having some help. Right. But the guy I went to see,
yeah.
I've lost all faith in. As a doc, yeah, and I was seeing him thinking he was a cardiologist,
right?
And turns out it's just a general practitioner.
Oh,
and so it's like, well, yeah, I've got one of those, and it's pretty good, yeah. I've got a cardiologist. I was thinking maybe he's not so good, which is why I'm seeing you, and you're not one, So I'm going back to my old cardiologist, but this new medication seems to be – so it seems to stop the irregular heart rhythm, which is
cool.
The thing that makes you feel really darn weird for a lot of time. So hopefully there's still some weird loss of strength in my shoulders, which is kind of bizarre. It's hard to explain. It's like your arms are heavier than normal and you've got no strength to
– wow.
strange. Can't explain that. That's just weird. And but yeah, other than that, I'm feeling okay at the moment. So you know, cool. Fingers crossed. Yeah,
uh-huh. That's good.
Yeah, mind you, I did the mail thing and the whole bank of tests this doctor gave me to have done. I haven't had any of them done, as you tend to do. But I'm going to see my regular doc and say, should I get these tests done?
Right.
See what he said. But he's sick at the moment. He's been off for a few weeks sick. So I don't know what's wrong with him. So it's kind of funny. But yeah, I'm feeling pretty good and still tire out very easily.
Yeah.
I mean, so I've been out shooting, but I only go out for like an hour and a half.
Right.
And pretty much standing in one spot. So it's not particularly taxing.
Yeah.
The heaviest thing is holding on 150 to 600 for that length of time.
I must admit, Kath and I are both feeling very wiped out after this second bout of COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be the long COVID.
Yeah. So I've got back from Western Australia, and of course the dog was excited to see me. He was like, "Oh, great, we start to go for a run again."
Walkies.
No, bike ride and run. So but I've had to cut the length of my rides way back. We were doing 6, 7, 8 k's a day, and I'm struggling to do 3 now.
Wow.
Just doing 2.5, 3 k rides. I figure even selecting a lower gear, I'm still feeling the exhaustion, So,
just in case you didn't know, I've never hadn't cycled myself in the past. Apparently, gears make a difference.
They do. Yeah. It's amazing.
I'm told so. Yeah. So yeah, I like to put my non-expert opinion in everywhere, of course. So.
All right, mate. Well, happy New Year. Good to see you.
And to you too, and to all our lovely listeners. I hope 2025 is not like the previous four.
Absolutely.
Mind you, unfortunately, 2025 did start with a what the f***? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, first, second, third, and the last time that happened was 2020. So, and may I also, my wife was just mentioning this before coming on about this woman who's wrote this book in like the 1990s, based in the year 2025.
Oh, wow.
And in the year 2025, America got a fascist president come in who came in under the guise of Make America Great Again or something very similar to that.
Yeah, right.
And Los Angeles was burning.
Wow.
35 years ago. It's shot up the New York Times.
Was she a writer for The Simpsons?
Oh, exactly. What the hell?
The number of correct predictions that The Simpsons made is phenomenal.
It's apparently something to read up on.
Wow.
Very funny. Yeah. So anyway, awesome. That's it.
All right, mate.
Thank you for listening, everybody.
Good to chat again. And again, Paul Sutton, thank you so much for coming and hanging out in the Pinnacles, mate. It was a great experience and I really enjoyed it. So, yeah.
Doodles.
All right. Talk to you in a couple of weeks.
You will. Bye.
You've been listening to Shutters Inc. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.